Welcome to The Credit Connection with High Tech Lending's David Brown, helping you get your finances in order and get you the credit you deserve. The Credit Connection, here on KSMA, 1240 AM, 99.5 FM, and 1240KSMA.com. Now, from High Tech Lending, David Brown.
Welcome to our show, The Credit Connection. I'm your host, David Brown, with High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. At The Credit Connection, we want to connect you to the credit you want and deserve for your home, business, and personal use. Here we discuss all things creditworthy, such as lenders, FICO scores, interest rates, credit cards, mortgages, you name it. If it has to do with credit or money, we'll discuss all the aspects. We're a financial literacy class with different topics each week. I encourage you to ask your questions through our website, reloans.com. Hit the Contact Us tab and leave your question or comment. You can also call us at 805-686-2321. Today's program, we're going to pull back the curtain on real estate appraisals. First, though, I'm going to lead off today with some information about some short sales. If you've had a short sale or foreclosure, what is the waiting period before you can get another mortgage or finance a home once again? Well, that depends on the program that you qualify for. For example, if you have VA benefits, it's a two-year waiting period. If you're doing a conforming loan, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, it's a four-year waiting period, but there are exceptions. If you have a particular extenuating circumstances, that waiting period goes down to 2 years. So those circumstances might include a death in the family, a hospitalization, or something like that that precipitated the event. For FHA loans, it's 3 years. And then there are some non-QM loans and lenders out there that have even less. There's some people that'll finance one day out of foreclosure or one day out of bankruptcy, but you'll be paying a little higher interest rate on those programs. But they exist. Anyway, just want to keep you informed on that. Now let's introduce our guest, Greg Fields of Fields Appraisal here in Santa Maria. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us how you got into the appraisal business and your background.
Well, years ago, back in, 1983, 84, I got done with Cal Poly and I had no idea what I wanted to do. I wasn't one of those guys that went through interviews to go to this big business, and I'm a homegrown guy and wanted to stay here. And I was coaching football out at St. Joseph at the time. And Dave Brunell, the athletic director who coached me, came up to me one day and he knew my predicament. And he said, you think you'd go out and look at a house, measure it and figure out what it was worth? I don't know, I guess. And one of his good friends was an appraiser. And at the time in 85, it was really busy. And he knew how busy his friend was, and he's looking for somebody. And so Sandy McCush with Coast Appraisal Service, he opened his door to me, trained me from ground zero. I never knew this industry even existed. And it kind of evolved from there. And I was with him for about 10 years. That's kind of how I got going, is back in the old West when you didn't have to have a license. And you pretty much could just hang a shingle out, like they used to say.
What are the experience and licensing and educational requirements appraisers have to have today?
Like I said, back in the old day, they could just put out a shingle. And and from there, like the Appraisal Institute's a big organization that kind of formulated to bring in the appraisers into some kind of legitimacy. Right. And so people would join different groups just so you could just say, well, I belong to such and such, because you got to have some credibility to build it. And there was another organization that actually a guy sent in, Toby the Cat. He was the appraiser. And Toby got into the organization. He sent his check in and he was part of it. So it was kind of made fun of that organization.
Right.
But like the Appraisal Institute's been around for a long time and they've done a lot of good work and they're very much into the legislation of things. And then, when the meltdown of 05, 06, Dodd-Frank came through and they decided, we're going to regulate the appraisal business a little bit more than we did before. Back in 93, they started the licensing. But now we really got to rein in these guys, because basically, as they say, everything runs downhill, and down at the bottom of the hill is the appraiser. So we're going to take care of him, and we're going to blame the whole thing on him. So, but now it's lightened up. They got real tough. I mean, for a while they were requiring a bachelor's degree to become an appraisal, and I love my job, but I will be maybe not first to admit, but I'm in the top 10 of many, and it's not rocket science.
Right?
Do you really need a bachelor's degree, and what do you need it in? It wasn't
right
specific in that. What they found out is they overregulated, and there was less and less appraisers getting into the business. And so they were bringing this pool way down to where it was becoming, you know, not futuristic. There's right. not going to be enough appraisers. Kind of interesting. When I first got into appraising, the average age was 58 years old, the appraiser. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then you're sitting there in class and, you know, you're 25, 26 years old. Oh, gosh, these old guys, you know, all these old guys. Well, I'm at that age now. Where I'm that average age guy. So it's like, wow, what happened? I don't know.
Well, are there new guys coming in?
There are new. They've now changed it to an easier way to get the experience. They've changed it to where you just have to have a bachelor's degree. So they've lowered that. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of more lenient on working hours. You have to basically put in about 2,000 hours before you can actually get your license.
Wow.
And that's tough. That's at 40 hours a week. That's a year.
Who's the licensing authority?
The different states. Each state has their own.
Okay.
So they have different regulations and
per state.
All that.
And then are there other classifications like residential, right. residential over $1 million and commercial and things
yeah,
like
that? Yeah, there's a trainee license, and then there's a residential license, then there's a certified residential, and then there's a certified general. And they can all do different things. Certified general can do everything. Certified residential, you can do residential property, you can do some commercial property. I mean, a trainee can do, he can do anything under anybody.
Okay. What's an MAI?
That's one of those designations like the Appraisal Institute has SRA. And those were those things back when you had no licensing, but you had to have some, you know,
right.
you got to build your legitimacy. If I'm going to pay you $400 to do an appraisal on my house, or the other side of it, commercially, I'm going to pay you $2,000, $5,000 to do a commercial appraisal.
Right.
What are your qualifications?
Right.
Well, I belong to this, so I've had to do some things in order to get that designation. And then in 93 was the time when they started licensing everybody and kind of killed the old West. And there wasn't a whole lot of oversight of it. It's like we just made this organization and to build your legitimacy and besides experience, because someone doesn't know.
When does a person need a property appraisal?
Basically, any time you want to, you or somebody else that you're involved in a transaction with needs to know what that property is worth.
Okay.
I mean, you can get one just because you want to know. You go to sell your property. If you want to buy a property, you're going to want to get done. Divorces for probate, estate taxes, or if you want to... challenge the tax on your property.
Okay, the value.
Yeah, yeah, anytime.
Yeah, I actually did that once on a purchase, and I challenged the rate because they were going off the contract price. And I showed them that because it was 100% financed, the net present value was the true price, not the contract price. And we ended up agreeing to that.
So, you know, and I think a lot of people, you know, should look into that if they do have a dispute, because it's more of a formula that they come out with. A lot of times it's based on the purchase price.
Yeah.
I think it's 1.1% or something property tax and things like that. But what if the property has been in your family for 100 years?
Right.
And then you get into that Prop 13 stuff too.
Right.
But on the other end, I mean, you can dispute it. They have procedures, so you just have to basically check with the assessor.
And then you would need it for, you know, probate if somebody dies and so forth. But then, or estates or even trust might want to know what their property's worth before it's sold.
But, you know, and there's other types of appraisals, too. I mean, there's right away, you know.
Easements.
Caltrans, easements, and things like that. So there's a big world out there in appraising. It's just not the guy that comes to your house. For some of that stuff, especially ranch land, that's important, you know, the easements and things like that.
What would you say the majority of appraisals are? Financing or?
Yeah, I think it's read like 65% of all appraisals are done for financial transactions.
Or banks.
Basically, residential.
Yeah. How accurate are appraisals? Out of all the appraisals you do, let's say it's for a sale, or how close to that sales price do you get?
Well, I'd like to say I'm 100% accurate, but at the same time, the whole thing is built around, it's my opinion of the value. And right, but when you use that word opinion, it takes away a little bit of that science out of it.
Right. It becomes subjective.
Exactly. But with that, I'm bringing in my expertise and my experience in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, give or take, 2-3% within the value.
That's pretty good.
You know, if it's a reasonable transaction, it's a fair transaction.
Mm-hmm. How have companies like Zillow and Trulia affected your business and or your clients' expectations for appraisal and values?
You know, that's one of those things that you want the quick answers. You go on the computer and get it. And the only problem is they don't break down to you how they come up with their property. An example is when we were having all the foreclosures in 03 to 04, 05, how are they getting that information? A house might foreclose and that transaction is recorded at a certain number that's lower than the market value. Do they use that? Do they not use that? There's no disclaimers, no parameters given. An example here in town on Westgate, basically when Zillow was kind of new, a guy called me and he goes, well, how accurate is this? And let me see. And and I looked up his house. He goes, well, Zillow shows me as having the most expensive house in my development. Yeah. And I looked it up and he's got the smallest house. And I go, well, you've got the lowest square footage. How accurate do you think it is? Oh, he realized it wasn't so accurate, but they've gotten a lot better. And so you got to take it with a grain of salt in that respect.
Okay. And truly is basically the same.
Same thing. Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Greg. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Greg Fields regarding appraisals.
Mom, are you okay?
Honey, I'm fine. Just a broken glass.
Really? Are you okay?
I haven't been sleeping well since Dad, you know. I wake up at night worried if I can make ends meet.
Mom, why don't we look into a reverse mortgage? Then you won't have to make any more house payments and you can live comfortably.
Should I just call the guys on TV?
No, who knows where they're from? My neighbor recommended David Brown of American Senior. He'll come to the house and answer all our questions. Mom, call David at American Senior, okay? Here, I Googled the number, 686-2321.
686-2321.
All homeowners over 62, don't worry about your finances. Call 686-2321. 686-2321. Get a reverse mortgage with David Brown of American Senior. David Brown of American Senior, a division of High Tech Lending, licensed by the Department of Oversight under California Law Mortgage and Lending Act, NMLS 7147, CA3413-0937.
Welcome back to the second part of our show, The Credit Connection. If you're just now joining us, we are speaking with Greg Fields about appraisals. Greg, are you always looking for the fair market value in an appraisal?
That's pretty much dictated by who your client is. I mean, if your client's a lending institution, if it's a person or if it's an entity, what they define what the market value is, what they're looking for. You know, obviously, people in a divorce situation, one guy wants a higher and lower, but you just got to put your hands over your ears and I don't care about that. We want fair market value. Or it might be, if it's for date of death, it'd be for the date of death maybe a year ago. I had one person call 10 years. Like, well, I should have done it. I didn't do it. It's like, well, and I felt bad
because
she's a sweet old lady,
yeah.
But you know, I didn't have any data from 10 years ago. I didn't know what the property looked like 10 years ago and things like that. But generally, probably 95% of the time, you're looking for fair market value.
Fair market value. Yeah. Otherwise, it's a date specific.
Right.
Okay.
Or proposed. Proposed. If it's, you know, construction or something like that. Yeah, that could be a date into the future.
Right.
But most of those are still cuffed back to the date of the effective date of the appraisal, which is generally the day you inspect the property.
Okay, good. How do appraisals differ for financing versus developments? Is it based by the lender, whether it be FHA or VA or conforming, or how do they differ? I know there are different forms sometimes for different programs.
Yeah, they have different requirements. An example, if I do a conventional loan appraisal on a house versus an FHA. FHA want a little more in depth. They want to know a few more things. We've got to do an inspection of the attic, of the crawl space. They want you to turn on the appliances, turn on electricity, check the plugs. A little more in depth into the inspection. Where a conventional, they don't ask for those things. So FHA, you know, you got to check for paint. Is the peeling paint? And then how old's the house? If it's older than 1978, there's some issues possibly with lead paint. So there's different. Yeah, your client pretty much sets the tone for where you're going with that.
With regards to the type of appraisal. So whereas a new construction or something like that might be entirely different.
Right. And then with the new construction, like we have a lot of new developments here in Santa Maria, the lender will want, like if there's you're doing the first house. I've been one where I'm doing the first house in a development. Well, there's no sales here.
Right.
And so they've come out with, they generally want at least one or two sales outside that new development. Well, if you have none, then you can, all of them are going to be outside. Right. So you got to figure out where is that competing with? Who are you competing with in this housing track? Housing track A, if we're a new, are we competing with B over here? Or are we competing with homes that are in C, which is a little different? Mm-hmm. So you take a little bit of give and take everywhere there and try and piece it together and figure out where
And do you get a lot of pressure from either developers or brokers to enhance the price a little bit because it's phase two or phase three and it should be more than the phase one type of thing?
It always seems like I get the first appraisal to go in phase two or phase three where they've just done a $15,000 increase. And it's like, what? I mean, all my sales in the development are this.
Yeah.
So it gets really tough in that respect. But you understand where they're going. You know, they've had that price sitting there for a while and things like that. Another example, I did an appraisal early on in that development above the racetrack where they had gone through a foreclosure and a new developer came in and there was no sales. Well, there was one sale, but it wasn't an arm's length transaction.
Oh.
And so that was interesting when you investigate the sale and find out what's going on. It was actually somebody that worked for the company that they sold them a house.
They're in
is sort of
a
kind
big red flag.
Yeah. But it was interesting because the developer, he said, well, these houses, you know, we're just like Trilogy. And my first response is, where's the golf course? I mean, you got kind of the racetrack here and you're not even close. Yeah. I mean, your quality might be similar, but we're not there. And you got to be realistic and step away from the influences that they're trying to give you.
Right. Right. And I have to assume it's all over the map with that too.
Oh, it is. And you just got to.
And you mentioned it earlier, like in a divorce situation, one buying the other out. Well, let's make it as low as possible or let's, increase that price.
Yeah, I'll be sure to point things out and show you things that might not be wrong. But and you just got to take it with a grain of salt because you don't want to sit there and say, no, I can't. I don't want to personally be, a jerk to the people.
Right.
I try and please everybody. I'll listen to everything, but.
Right.
I think I'm, through experience, smart enough to filter my way through and figure out where we're supposed to be.
Well, therein is, make sure that you have those ethics and morals for a fair assessment of value.
It's a test sometimes, too. I mean, really, it's funny. I did one, and I hate going to court. I just, the anxiety of going to court, and I've really kind of sat back and realized it has nothing to do with my appraisal. It's just you watch it and watch it unfold. It's that battle between the attorneys.
Right.
And they ask questions that are just not important to what we're doing right there.
Right.
And it's like they're trying to justify their paycheck.
Right.
And I went through one in San Luis, and it was the judge just laughed because he was tired of the one attorney. And the guy was just asking questions. And I would look at the judge, and he would just, I could tell that he was done.
Well, they should take note. Hey, is there a difference in appraisal or threshold for either a purchase or a refinance?
No, because you're just finding, you want what the market value is.
Okay.
The probable market value of the house. Yeah, so there wouldn't be a difference in refinance or a purchase.
Well, I find that the purchase really defines fair market value by virtue of willing seller, willing buyer.
Right. And you got to figure that out too. Sometimes it isn't a perfect transaction, but you got to find out, is that person really buying that house at fair market value, or did they go on a 90 degree day and it's got a pool and they're willing to pay extra for that pool because that's the day they were there.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that pool is not reflective in value in the market.
Okay.
But it does bring that also to this point. And I've learned this from a Reader Gilman, who's appraisers forever here, and I forget which one of them told me, because the bank never wants to own the most expensive house in the neighborhood. And that kind of goes through with the Dodd-Frank thing and the regulations and things like that. I tell people, I'm not appraising this house just for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm appraising it as if, God forbid, the next day the bank owns that house and wants to sell that house.
Yeah.
And generally, banks, they don't want it on their books for 60, 90 days, whatever the market marketing time is, they want to be able to move that house. So you got to take some of that objectivity into that in your formulation of the value.
You're right. It's got to happen. Well, what is the highest and best use, and how does it affect the current use? Or, I'll give you an example. Doing a loan for a guy, he's got 5 acres, and it's zoned for 1 acre parcels, but there's no water available to subdivide it. He might get it subdivided into 2 parcels tops, between the health services, septic, and water availability top. So it's not really worth the five parcels. And he uses it for livestock, you know, the surplus land. So he's got no intention of even doing a subdivision, but because it wasn't the high defined as the highest and best use, declined.
And that's there's four tests. There's legally permissible, would be zoning. You know, you can't go put an apartment building on a R1 zone property.
Right.
The next one is physically possible. I've got a 5,000 square foot lot, but I want to put a 8,000 square foot house, one story on there. Well, that's not physically possible.
Right.
Or people want to do certain height.
Right.
I want to do a three-story house. Yeah. Well, there's restrictions on height and things like that. And then you get into physically possible, which would be that. And then financially is, hey, if I got to put in, one, a lot split's expensive. I have to put in water. I have to do this, do that. Got to bring utilities to the property. Well, that's not financially going to make it worth me subdividing. So that's a decision there as well. And an example I thought of on the way over here, down here on Blosser Road, there's the old Mahoney house. It's an old, big right. single-family dwelling, but everything next to it is commercial property.
Right.
Well, that's the highest and best use of that house is no longer a single-family property from 30 years ago.
Right.
It would be as commercial. Developed commercially.
Right.
So it's interesting along that line. But that gets in the more, you know, the commercial aspects rather than a single family.
Okay. Can appraisals be transferred from one person to another?
The big thing used to be the bank. You'd go to bank A and you want to get an appraisal and you've got it done. And then, you know, bank A, those rates aren't as good as I want. I'm getting a better program over at bank B. Right. Well, it came and it is today that you can get it transferred, but you've got to get permission from bank A to transfer it over.
But it doesn't transfer the liability to you for bank B if you did it for bank A. You're not taking on any liability for that.
No, not on a single family rate. No. And then you got to make sure that bank B understands that these were the parameters of bank A, that they asked me to do this appraisal.
Right.
You know, they didn't ask me to do it as if, you know, it wants to sell in 10 days.
Right. Well, what are the reasons that you have to revisit a property? If you've got to go back, I know from my experience, it's typically minor repairs, that the water heater hasn't been strapped for earthquake, or there's no CO2 carbon monoxide detector, or you didn't have access to a particular spot.
And my main occurrence is I forgot to take a picture of a room or something. That's why I'm going back. It's like, man, how did I miss that picture? But yeah, like FHA, you have to have the water heater strapped, double strapped. You have to have a carbon monoxide. You have to have a smoke alarm. Those things have to be done, and they're not always done.
Right.
And then, so you'll have to do a reinspection of the property. Peeling paint might have to be repaired. Wood rot, things like that, near acid. And it's technically, you know, a separate assignment to go back out. Right. And reinspect the property.
Or a certificate of occupancy, you know, then you're going back out because you, now that's...
new construction ready to go and it is ready to be occupied. And those are, with the developments in town, is usually done along with the appraisal.
Yep. How has the AMC process influenced the appraisals and the independence of appraisers? AMC, for those that don't know, is a... appraisal management company through the Dodd-Frank and even before that, how appraisers are typically assigned for a residential assignment.
Yeah, well, the big thing for most appraisers in town, I'll tell you what the difference is, how it impacts us is we're still making the same money we were making 10 years ago on an appraisal. Appraisal management companies, they have their pluses. I mean, it's brought some regulation in and cleaned up the appraiser a little bit. I have different appraisal management companies that I submit my appraisal to, and they double check it before you submit it. And you might make a mistake, make your appraisal better. You correct the mistake. Hey, this doesn't make sense here. We correct those things. So it has made the appraisal stronger. On the other side, it's somebody else dipping their hand into the consumer's pocket. Okay, now we say an appraisal is $400 typically. Well, that appraisal management company wants to make some money, so they're going to charge you a little bit more. They might charge you $600 to get that appraisal. And, of course, we were talking earlier, so now your appraisal is $600. The appraiser comes out, and he's in your house for 10 minutes, and he's getting $600.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the first one to say, well, I'm not going to tell you what I make, but I'm not making all that. But so they have the good and they have the bad.
Right.
The only bad thing about them, there's more than one bad, but banks saw this money entity of these appraisal management companies,
right,
and they started opening their own appraisal management companies. The only problem is that where's your oversight there?
Yeah.
I'm lending you the money. Hey.
You own the appraisal management company.
Yeah. There's direct stuff and you get your hands. Okay. Too many people doing the dishes.
Well, hey, Greg, thanks a million for being with us. Greg Fields of Fields Appraisal Services. What's the best way for our listeners to reach you?
They can get my email at fieldsgreg@aol.com, fieldsgreg@aol.com, or my business phone number, 805-928-4998.
Greg, thanks so much for joining us today and sharing with us your expertise and perspectives. Every week, we endeavor to earn your trust and provide valuable information that makes a difference to you. If you agree, please share our message with others, families, and friends. If you missed one of our value-packed shows, we now are posting those on our website, reloans.com. And for questions and comments about this show or others, please go to our website, reloans.com. Click the Contact Us tab. Or call us directly at 805-686-2321. Leave your questions in, or we'll get back to them the next day or for the next show. Thank you for tuning in to The Credit Connection, where we do the work and you get the credit. I'm your host, David Brown, from High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. See you next week with another interesting Credit Connection topic.
You've been listening to The Credit Connection with David Brown from High Tech Lending. For more information, contact David Brown directly at 805-686-2321. That's 805-686-2321. Or by email at dbrown@hightechlending.com. dbrown@hightechlending.com. And visit David online at reloans.com. That's reloans.com. And tune in next time for High Tech Lending's David Brown and The Credit Connection here on KSMA.